This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show number 110. Hi, you're listening to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. You can find us at pitchvision.com. You can email us on
mycricketcoach@pitchvision.com.
And you can call us on
020-88-167-691.
I'm David Hinchliffe.
And I'm Berners.
Another gorgeous day outside, Berners, and that's always good when the cricket season is upon us. How is the sun where you are? Is it blazing down?
Yeah, it's good. Tracks are hardening up. The rollers are out. The grass cutters are out there. Sprinkler system's activated. It's all systems go. Summer's here. It's official, kids.
It's kicked off. Excellent. Okay, and of course we know it's kicked off because you've played your first game of cricket. I missed out last week due to our friendly being called off, but you managed to get a game in. So tell us the gruesome story, Berners.
Oh, travelled into deepest Surrey, Weybridge away. Took guard, leg stump. Forgot that I've actually shuffled my guard over to middle and leg now. Did that about 5 years ago, but forgot that. Got to about nine, went back and across. He jagged one off the seam. Didn't quite get back and across enough. And off stump was somewhere down near the sight screen behind me. Mm. Trudged off, much to my disappointment. Other opener got 85, so he's pretty much established his place in the team for the rest of the year. I'll probably be hovering around the fourth and fifth team till September time when everyone starts to go on holiday and has lost their love of the game. But yeah, fantastic start.
And what was the result of the match?
Oh, we won. But we're very good at cricket, but unfortunately I'm not. I just kind of make up the numbers. We had a youthful side, but it was very enjoyable. Weather was superb, and Weybridge is a lovely ground down in Surrey. If you're ever down in that neck of the woods, stop by. They play a very good standard down there in the Surrey Championship, and excellent egg crust sandwiches.
And what time did you manage to finish the game?
It was over by about seven. It was one of the longer ones. I was doing fine leg to long on, so it was totally enthralling in the field. Oh, I got a catch, kind of running back behind me. Looked like I was going to drop it about five or six times, and then surprisingly clung onto it. It was, quite a shock.
Always nice when you get one early doors to remember what it's like to feel that hard cricket ball landing in your mitts.
Yeah.
We had a message on our Facebook page, which you can find it on our if you do a search for Pitch Vision Academy on Facebook. You've got that there, Berners, haven't you, from someone who's got a bit of a story to tell?
I have. Good old Pete Fairburn. He's saying 2 weeks to the first game of the season. And thank you, David, for your excellent articles on nutrition and fitness. As a result, he's lost 4 stone and he's fitter than ever. So there you go, coach. He's really looking forward to putting it all into action now on the field, and testimony to yourself and the advice that you've been giving these guys. That's good application of your theory.
Well, yeah, I like to think so. You know, there's plenty of people around who have gone through similar experiences, cricketers and otherwise. So it's nice to know that someone out there is taking exactly what we say and turning it into results that you can measure, like saying, well, I lost 4 stone. I decided I was overweight. I lost 4 stone and now I'm a different man and I'm ready for the start of the cricket season. If you can put in the commitment, we've got all the advice that you need. I'm joined again on the line by our Australian correspondent, Lee Lowry, who we've missed for the last few weeks. So welcome back to the show, Lee.
Thanks, mate. Yeah, sorry about being in the black hole of Australia.
Well, I'm sure you've been busy. So what have you been up to? Your season's finished now. So how did you do towards the end of the season?
Yeah, team was fantastic in the end. We were lucky enough to just scrape in as a number 8 seed, and scrape in was just by literally, you know, 1 wicket's worth of points or 15 runs worth of points. So we've just got in by the skin of our teeth, and we ended up playing the final series of our lives as a club. And the first final we played, the first side, which was St Kilda, and they had quite a few ex-state players playing for them and current state players as well, and we managed to knock them off in the first final, and that put us in a semi-final down at Geelong, and we managed to beat them in a wild game as well. Our bowling was absolutely sensational in all the finals, and that's what really, you know, got us through the final series as such. The batting, we had some good partnerships, but not a lot of scoring around it. So probably would be best described as one of the best finals in the history of the comp, I'd imagine. Wow. Yeah, we managed to play a Dandenong team who was full of beans and full of a fairly pacey attack, and one that consisted of Peter Siddle, who we're all familiar with through the Ashes series, Darren Pattinson, which you guys would be familiar with, playing that one test for England, and his brother James Pattinson, who has just recently finished up playing in Bangladesh with the Australian team. So they hadn't even loaded their side with another two fast bowlers, so they ended up having five quickies, and wow. They had us in a bit of trouble at sort of about 3 for 80, 4 for 80, and we managed to put on a solid partnership of between our captain Nick Jewell and another veteran player, Luke Walker, came out the next morning, bowled us out for 220 after having us 215 for 5 overnight, so they took 5 for 10 in about 5 overs, and Siddle took 3 of those wickets and ended up 5 for the first innings. And then dramatically, normally the game's played on first innings, but with the way the game ended up falling out, it was a 4 innings game, and they were coming into the Saturday night 9 for 215, needing 10 for victory, and come the next morning they passed us 9 down, and the 10th wicket fell when they were 2 runs past. So we thought there's, you know, still 80 odd overs left in the game, we'll keep going and pushing on, and they managed to our boys managed to get 130 front, have a crack and see what we can do, and believe in the strength of the bowlers, and ended up having them 9 down for 127. So as the last over was bowled, we couldn't get that 10th wicket, and they gave up the chase for the runs to get the outright victory, but they went on first innings. So, yeah, it was a hell of a grand final, and, you know, full reward to Daniel for, you know, having batsmen that can, you know, find their grit and determination under so much pressure. But, yeah, also to our bowlers who really kept us in the game.
So that's a dramatic finale, but now it's the anti-climax, and you've got the long winter ahead of you, and there's plenty of sport to watch, but what do you do with yourself in terms of activity over the off-season?
Yeah, well, we had our presentation night last Friday night, so it just shows how keen everybody is already, just talking about the fact that, you know, we might have gone under everyone's skin last year as far as coming through from the 8th seed and getting through to a grand final, but we're going to be hunted a bit more next year, and we've got to really step up, and everyone was keen about that, and a lot of the boys are heading over your way, over to England and playing, and me and myself, what I normally do is have a couple of weeks off and sort of just reflect on the season and perhaps ways I've got out, or as a bowler, ways that you thought you might have improved, and you can only sort of do that by, say, chatting to your senior players over there and sort of getting an idea on where you can improve, but I'll normally sit down and have a think through the methods of dismissals that I put out, sort of have a bit of a plan coming into pre-season about what I want to achieve in the pre-season, and I'll normally sort of have that 3 weeks to a month off and then look to just planning my fitness regime coming into May, June, and we've already had the call from the coach that we're not going to need our batting gear until at least September, he reckons. We're going to be running off our feet for the July and August, and yeah, we're going to do it hard yards to try and back up what we achieved this year.
Well, we'll keep in touch with you over the winter, and you can keep us up to date on how things are going, and whether that tactic of starting with fitness and going on to skills is more beneficial. That'd be interesting to see how that pans out, because I think that's probably the best way to do it. But well, the proof of the pudding's in the eating, isn't it?
Yeah, that will be interesting. Only coming into the season, which is early October, so that gives us all of September and maybe a bit of August to have the skills going. So that's going to be a really interesting one to follow.
It's time now for the question section on the show, and you've got a chance to win a prize, which is a online coaching course courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy. And you can find out more about those at pitchvision.com/academy. Just click on courses or click on the advert. So to win one of those, all you need to do is send in a question to us. And we've had some people send in some questions this week. So Berners has been rummaging around in his sack and he's pulled out a couple of surprises for us. So what have you got, Berners?
Yeah, sack's getting quite full these days as the season approaches. We've got a really interesting one here from Anthony Morris. Young Anthony Morris, he's only 13, and he's going to head to the gym for the first time. He's saying that he's built up a relatively good base of fitness with body weight training at home, and just feels he needs that little bit more extra motivation to be in great shape for the new season, which for him is going to start in the next 2 weeks. He was looking for a bit of advice, coach.
The first thing, absolutely number one thing I would say is if he's been doing body weight training, there's a fair chance that he hasn't been doing enough work on the pulling type movements of his body. He mentioned things like, I want to work on my quads. And what was it he said? He want to work on his core and his...
His core and his thighs and his glutes.
Yeah. See, that he's thinking of the body as individual... It's individual muscles there, and the body doesn't really work like that. It doesn't work as a set of individual muscles. It works as movement. So, basically, you've got two movements, which is pulling and pushing. So if you're doing body weight training, what you tend to do there is pushing type stuff. You tend to do your squats or your single leg squats or your push-ups, things like that. You don't really think about the pulling because it's a lot harder to, say, do chin-ups. And it's almost impossible to do anything for the posterior chain, the glutes and the hamstrings mainly. So, and that's pulling as well. So, say, a deadlift, for example, if you've got a weight on the floor, you bend down, you pick it up, that's a deadlift, that's a lower body pulling exercise because you're pulling the weight off the floor. So you're probably going to need to look at those type of movements first, the pulling movements first. Anything where you where you're pulling a weight towards your body and the upper body, or you're lifting a weight off the ground on the lower body. So you want to be looking at some kind of deadlift style movement. Maybe a single leg deadlift style movement is better because you're probably not going to have access to a decent amount of weight. And also, just like a seated row type exercise, or maybe a standing row, or one of those bent over rows, you've got your hand on the bench and you're rowing the weight up towards you. You've seen that type of exercise. Those type of exercises improve the strength of your pulling movements, which is probably where you're going to be weakest if you've only done body weight to start with. Don't spend too much time on interval training. Interval training is good, but don't spend too much time on it because this time of year, you want to be looking more towards injury prevention. And if you're sitting on a machine, on a cycle, doing interval training, then you're not in the best position because you're probably hunched over, your hips are bent, and you're not improving the areas that are probably the weakest, i.e. your hips, you need extra flexibility and mobility in your hips, and if you're locked into that bike position, then you're reducing the mobility in your hips. Don't bother with the bench press, by the way. No point in doing that in season. Almost no point at all doing it in season with a bar. Do more push-ups. Add resistance to your push-ups with a band or something like that. Or you can do dumbbell bench pressing. That's okay. If the gym's got it and it allows you to do it, which is maybe a bit of a long shot, but if the gym's got it and allows you to do it, then try doing some medicine ball throws against the wall. You can do overhead throws, you can do chest passes, or you can do side passes. They're all pretty good. do that first, then go on to, well, actually, do your warm-up first. Lots of mobility, lots of stretching, lots of active stretching rather than static stretching. Loads of, you know, as many mobility drills as you can to make sure your hips are nice and open and your shoulders are nice and open. Then get onto the power exercises, do a few power exercises, then do your strength training, your resistance training. You don't need to do a lot, a couple of sets, make sure it's technique, do something like 10 reps, 8 to 10 reps, make sure you're not losing technique on any of those reps. Technique is far more important at the age that you're at. If you really need someone to be watching you if you can, so if there's a fitness instructor around, get them to keep a close eye on you. Avoid the machines if you can. There's nothing specifically wrong with the machines, but it's much better to learn good technique in free weights, even if you're not lifting a huge amount of weight. It doesn't matter how much weight you're lifting. The point is you're doing the movement and you're gradually progressing the weight as you go along. And then finish up with your intervals if you want to do your intervals, and then off you go. Do a little bit of static stretching. A great extra thing that you can do, again, you might need to spend a bit of money on this because chances are the gym won't have it. If you can do foam rolling, you can really improve the quality of your tissue, and that will really reduce your chance of injury. This time of year, you're not going to make great massive strides forward in fitness, but what you do want to do is make sure that the quality of your tissue and your ligaments and your bones are all capable of dealing with the pressures of playing cricket. So do your foam rolling. If you want to find out more about how to do foam rolling, go to pitchvision.com/academy. Go into the search box, type in foam rolling or foam roller, and you can get a full set of instructions on how to use that. If you're only going to get one piece of fitness equipment, probably foam roller is going to be your best. And you can use a foam roller from the age of 13. You can use it from any age, really. And you can really help you both recover after a game and reduce your chances of getting injury during a game. And remember that the focus is not on getting fit and killing yourself. The focus at this time of the year for someone who's just going into a season is to just keep yourself strong and moving in the right way to reduce your chance of injury and sort of compensate for all the bad stuff that cricket does to you. Cricket puts you in some very, very unusual positions. What you want to do is use the gym to do the opposite of what you're doing on the cricket pitch and what you're doing during the day. Oh, and good luck. Let us know how you get on with that, because that's a lot of advice I've thrown out there, and you're probably overwhelmed. So maybe you want to email us back in again with some specific question. That's fine. If you want to email those in, we'll answer those for you. What's the next question, Bernard?
Got a question here from Talal Ahmed. He's got a question which I probably want answering as well. He gets very nervous when facing fast bowling, and he's just wondering if there's any kind of technique or things he can do to adapt and make that a little bit easier than the trauma that can be swept across you as a guy barracks into the crease and whams one down past your ear holes.
One really simple way of dealing with it is just sort of reframing it's a psychological technique called reframing. All it means is that you adjust the situation to make it seem less terrifying, and there's loads of different ways you can do that just by changing the way you think about a situation. So if you think, oh my god, this bowler's gonna knock me on the skull first ball, and then he's gonna bowl me with a Yorker second ball, then the frame you're thinking about that situation is a very negative one. So if you can change that to a more positive one. So, for example, oh, this bowler's really good, much, much better than me, then, you know, perhaps he's better than me because, you know, he's much bigger and he can bowl the ball very fast. Well, you can think to yourself, well, I've got really good footwork. I'm going to be able to duck and weave and get through this no problem at all. If that's true to your specific situation. It may just be that all you need to do is stop being terrified by the hulking hairy guy at the top of his run, And you can do that by just simply imagining him in a far less terrifying way. So, you know, imagine him. These are very specific things, so these may not work for you. You have to come up with your own way. But say, for example, you imagine him dressed as a clown. I know it sounds a bit stupid, but maybe you think, well, there's no way a clown's going to knock my head off. I'm going to play him properly now. That only works if you find clowns funny. If you're one of those people who wake up in the night screaming at the idea of a clown, then maybe that's not the answer for you. But you get my point. If you reframe, think about the emotion that you're feeling and then reframe it in a way that is more easy for you to deal with.
So break it down a little bit.
Yeah, break it down. Make it fun. You know, deal with it in a way that where you think, well, this is, you know, this guy can't possibly cause me a problem because A, B, and C. So it stops you feeling helpless and hopeless, and it starts you feeling like, oh, well, actually, I can deal with this. And another way of doing it is, if you, say, for example, you come up against a fast bowler, a particular fast bowler who keeps doing you all the time, that's, you know, that happens quite a lot, then you can say to yourself, as you walk out to the crease, instead of thinking, oh, God, he gets me every time, this guy, you can just simply change that frame and say to yourself, this guy used to get me out all the time, but he doesn't do that anymore. This time I'm going to defeat him.
Yeah.
And just by changing it from in the past he used to, which is true, you've changed the frame of it, and you've changed it from this guy always gets me out, i.e. he will carry on doing it forevermore, to in the past he used to get me out, but from this point on it's a different story. From this point on, I'm going to be the one in charge of the situation. It's a subtle mental shift, but if you've got a good technique and you're good against fast bowling, and you've worked and you've practiced against fast bowling, technically you're good enough to be able to deal with it, then it just becomes a mental thing, and you can use a technique like reframing to change that negative thought into a positive one. And that's really what it's about, how to convince yourself that that negative thing you're feeling is wrong and replace it with a positive feeling that you genuinely believe. If you don't believe it, then you'll just say to yourself, oh, well, this is just a trick that I don't believe this. I'm just telling myself this. I don't believe it. Then you have to think of something else to do, because if you don't believe it, it's not going to work. If you genuinely believe it, you're going to do a good job. I'm joined on the line again by Craig Wright, who, as you'll recall from previous shows, is captain of our adopted club for the 2011 British summer, Watsonian CC in Edinburgh. And Craig and the team are going through some rigorous pre-season preparation before their league starts shortly. So, Craig, how are things going with your pre-season matches since we last spoke?
Well, I think we just played our first pre-season match when I spoke to you last, and we didn't play a game last weekend. We just had a centre wicket practice, which went pretty well with some decent weather and a decent surface to practice on. So the batsmen got some more time in the middle, and the bowlers got some more overs under the belt. So I think it was quite a productive exercise.
Did you play it as a game, or did you play it more as, you know, we're setting up a scenario and we're playing out a few overs for each batsman?
Yeah, more like that. Just to make sure everyone got what they needed out of it.
So, what's the benefit that you get from seeing players batting in a practice middle wicket situation compared to, say, being in the nets or in a practice match?
Well, I think it's a benefit from my point of view in terms of selection, seeing what people can do out in the middle. And I think from a player's point of view, it's just better being out in the middle, being in a live scenario, than it is being in the nets. It's not quite the same. I think most players would tell you that it's better batting and bowling in the middle. I think from a sort of selection point of view, I suppose also it gives you a chance to see guys in a proper match scenario type situation in terms of making selections when the first league match comes around in a couple of weeks' time, because we've, as I said to you last time, we've got sort of probably 15 or 16 guys challenging for the starting places, so it's always good to see what they've got in a live scenario before you have to pick the first team.
So things are shaping up well. They're all going the way they should be, and it's an interesting point you make about selection, because that's one of the things that club captains have to get their head around, is getting a team together of 10 others who they think can do a job. So how do you approach selection?
I think it probably varies from club to club, depending on what your resources are. You know, whether you've got a pool of first team players who are good enough to play, a pool of more than 11 first team players or players who you think are good enough to play first team cricket, which I think we've got this year. But I certainly know from experience of other clubs that there's some clubs who probably only think that they've got maybe six or seven guys who are good enough to play that level, and then another three or four, whatever it might be, filling up the numbers. So I really think you've just got to start from where you are in terms of your playing strength, and it'll really come down to who's showing good form, and that's where the pre-season games come in useful.
Yeah, it's a nice problem to have, and as you say, a lot of clubs won't have that particular problem. How do you go about then thinning it down? Do you look at, say, if you've got players who you can barely put a piece of paper between them, that you're always going to have two or three players in that situation, whether you think they're not quite ready or whether you've got too many in your situation? So how do you pin it down? Do you look at players' attitudes? Do you look at how the team gels together as a unit? Where do you find the differentiator?
Yeah, I think it's probably a bit of all the things you've just mentioned there. It's really just sort of weighing up all the attributes or strengths and weaknesses of a player, and then coming to a decision as to which one's the best for the team. So it could be on who's the best fielder. If they've not got much, if they're both batsmen, they've not got much between them in terms of their batting skills. It might be which one's the best fielder, or as you say, which one brings the most to the team dynamic, or which one can maybe bowl a few overs if you needed them to. So it really just depends on the situation and what skills and attributes each of the individual players have got, and then trying to fit that around what the team as a whole needs in terms of how you're going to try and play a cricket.
It can be difficult with a team of amateur players who aren't necessarily, cricket isn't the be-all and end-all. They're good players, but they've got other things going on in their lives. How do you, as a captain, how do you keep a side like that motivated?
Well, I think again we're pretty fortunate that we've got a motivated group of guys, and having performed pretty well last year and finishing second in the league competition, I think there's a desire and an ambition there to try and repeat that good performance, if not go one step further and win it. I don't think from my own point of view as a captain, I don't think that's a particularly difficult challenge for me with this particular group of players, keeping them motivated or ambitious.
You just have to wind them up and let them go and let them almost motivate themselves, because you know that they're ambitious.
I think so. But maybe actually with some of them, it's a case of certainly not winding them up, but actually keeping them calm.
Right.
We'll get one or two who get wound up enough, or perhaps on occasions too wound up. So I think one of the things that we focus on as a team, and we focused on last year, was sort of staying composed and making good decisions when we get into sort of crucial moments in games. So I think just staying calm and composed is probably one of our sort of watchwords, if you like, rather than necessarily needing to motivate guys or get them wound up as such.
Oh, okay. So you see yourself more in the captain's role, more as a stabilising influence on some of the younger players who can get a bit carried away at times.
Yeah, possibly. I mean, I think there's a time and a place for being a little bit more aggressive, and there's a time and a place for just doing the basics well. And it's just about recognising when those moments are in games and when those situations arise throughout the course of a throughout the course of a game or throughout the course of a season. And you know, I think it was one of the improvements we probably made last year was we actually won the vast majority of close games that we got ourselves into, and that's certainly something that I think is a characteristic of a good team. If you're winning close games, I think you've got something about you, and that's certainly something that we'll be looking to continue into this season.
Well, Craig, we will continue to stay in touch with you as excitement mounts before the start of the season, and thank you very much for your time today. That's Craig Wright, captain of Watsonian Cricket Club.
Cheers, David.
That's the end of this week's show, and I'm very excited because, weather permitting, next week I'll have completed my first proper game of cricket of the season, and it's a long old trip to an away game, so we're having an overnight stay, which could be a mistake if, judging by some of the people that I play with, but we'll find out about that next week, pre-season friendly before the league starts. But before we go, Berners, we've got to talk about who is going to win the competition. So which question caught your eye the most deeply this week?
Well, I thought Ant's question was good, and for a 13-year-old, he sounds like he's going to be a very intelligent cricketer. I think we should give it to Mr. Fairbairn, though, for losing those four stones. Is that possible this week, or...?
You know what? I think possibly we could break with tradition and give it away to somebody who's told us a story of success. Berners, if people want to get in touch with us with either any cricket coaching questions, any stories of success that they've had, how can they get in touch with us?
You can drop us a quick email. Our address is mycricketcoach@pitchvision.com, or feel free to give us a quick call. Our number here is 020-88-167-691.
That's an answer phone, so you can leave a message anytime you like, doesn't matter where you are in the world, and we'll pick that up when we wake up. And of course you can get us on Twitter. Our Twitter account is at PV Cricket Coach, and I'm always lurking around on there chatting to people and having good cricket conversations. We do also have a Pitch Vision Academy Facebook page. I was just saying to Berners that I do neglect it a little bit, but it seems that it looks after itself pretty well. So there's a few people on there who chat to each other and answer each other's questions, and every now and again I pop up and post some article information or answer a couple of questions on there, or we pitch a couple of questions for the podcast. So if you go to Facebook and do a search for Pitch Vision Academy, you should be able to find us. I'm not sure why, but the URL for it finishes with a very long number, 1535 something, I don't know. Anyway, it makes it very hard to read out, so I won't read it out. But if you go to Facebook and type in Pitch Vision Academy, you should be able to find us fairly easily, and you can join the few hundred people who chat on there regularly. Don't forget, you can also subscribe to the show using iTunes. So if you're an iTunes user, or you use any other kind of podcast catching program, you can head over there, do a search for Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. You'll find us pretty easily, or we have the feed in the show notes, so you can subscribe regularly, save you having to check back all the time, which I know some people do. We're off now to get excited about another bunch of IPL matches, and of course the forthcoming Royal Wedding, which I know Berners will be in attendance. So until next week, we'll see you next time.